Everyone, and welcome to today's Valentine's Day edition of Scouting the League. I won't even ask James or Neil what they have planned for their wives because I don't want to make all you listeners feel bad out there. For me and my wife, Alyssa, it's going to be a low-key night, hang out. We'll let all the the Valentine's Day daters do their thing tonight. We'll wait until the restaurants quiet down. But for whatever way you choose to do it, just have a good time tonight. Make it special. Going to be a really great episode today. I'm really excited to get into it. First, let me remind you to like, subscribe, share, give us a 5-star review rating wherever you are listening. We've continued to see our listenership go up, and thanks to you guys out there. After today's guest, I'm confident it is going to keep climbing. As always, I'm joined by my co-host and founder of Inside the League, Neil Stratton. I am Roderick David of Right Step Advising, and joining us today, get right to it, 2014 fourth-round pick out of Wisconsin, the 2010 Big Ten Freshman of the Year, 3-time Super Bowl champion, a man that has been named a Patriots All-Dynasty team member, and a man that firmly stuck the dagger in my heart as he crossed the goal line at overtime of Super Bowl 51. Running back James White. James, welcome to the podcast.
I appreciate you having me on. That was a great introduction. Sorry about that one game.
No, you're not. And you don't have to be. Again, everybody plays to win the game. Again, I told you when I talked to you about hopping on here, I had walked down from my seat in the stands to the tunnel. I was ready to go celebrate on the field, and by the time I get down there, it's a tie game, and I have to stand there in the end zone watching you guys, just slowly, methodically drive down the field, just slowly sticking that dagger in, and then, you crossing the goal line. One of the great Super Bowls of all time. Was great to be there, great to be a part of it. But obviously, one team wins, one team loses. We'll talk about this week's Super Bowl here today. So, James, real quick, what are you doing now? What are you doing these days? Keep yourself busy.
Right now, I've been doing Sirius XM Wednesday mornings from 7 to 9, the opening drive. Been doing that with Solomon Wilcots the last two seasons. Started with Big Ten Network as an analyst. This past fall, I've called some games for radio broadcasts with Sports USA over the last 2 years. And then I also started my own podcast called the Money Down Podcast with two of my former college teammates. We just got that going. So building that as well, just trying to stay busy, being retired, not on that structured schedule anymore. So just trying to fill all the holes and keep myself busy and chase my kids around as well. I got two kids, 4 and 3. So I'm right in the thick of it. So they keep me busy too.
Absolutely. That's good. And staying in football, sounds like you are a football junkie, just like Neil and I are. Again, can't imagine, when you're in the game, when you're out of the game, you're still in the game. So that's good. So let's start with the Super Bowl. We nearly saw a second overtime, a two overtime game, the second overtime game. Initial thoughts, recap, what did you guys think of the game? James, let's start with you.
I thought it was a great football game. And I know everybody likes the high scoring games these days, the 38, the 35 and all of that. But I thought it was going to be a game where points were going to be hard to come by. Two really good defenses and two offenses. Well, 49ers offense really good. The Chiefs offense was, they kind of sputtered a little bit throughout the year. You didn't know what you were going to get from them, but you still have that guy, Patrick Mahomes, at quarterback. And at the end of the day, that's what it came down to. In that second half, he just made the right decisions, whether it was him running or just taking the checkdowns. I thought the 49ers defense played well, but Patrick Mahomes has played extremely well in situational football, and that was the difference.
Yeah, situational football. We've talked about it before, and that's a lot of times what it comes down to. Neil, what were your thoughts?
It's fascinating. I've only watched the game one time, but it was really interesting how the Niners were able to get home in the first half without blitzing much. And the second half, I think they kind of counted on that happening again, stayed away from the blitz and weren't able to. And I wasn't able to watch enough to kind of see what adjustments the Chiefs made or what have you, but it's fascinating. I mean, you kind of pick your poison with Mahomes, and there's been enough fawning coverage of Patrick Mahomes over the last week and really over the last several years, but he is a very talented player. And I don't know if the key is to play coverage versus him. The key is to play man versus him. Yeah, I guess it's just, how do you want to die? And I think also, I think the Chiefs, I read somewhere a few weeks ago about how some broadcasters derided for saying that the Chiefs were going to kind of have to ride their defense to end the playoffs. And I think that's been true. I mean, I really was impressed with especially the back end, their secondary. I mean, McDuffie is a baller. Snead is a baller. You know, they are very talented in the back end, and you know, their defensive line does enough. I'm a big fan of Chris Jones. I didn't think he was a tremendous difference maker this time, but he is an excellent player and a guy that is going to be really interesting in free agency here in a few weeks. He's a very talented player and a guy that makes such a difference for them. So, you know, I guess my focus was kind of the defenses this in that game and kind of how they impacted things. And it was really interesting to watch.
Yeah, no, there were again, some of those big elements, Chris Jones, when it mattered, some of those big plays.
Yeah.
Pressures.
Again, your biggest players have to step up and make the biggest plays, the biggest moments. Again, any Super Bowl champion is going to be able to point to a couple situations like that. But again, the wild thing, again, teams talk about it with the Chiefs. They don't quarterback sneak during the regular season. Patrick Mahomes is not going to use his legs, but the dagger several different times to extend drives. Again, run that zone read, and there was nobody. It looked like there was maybe supposed to be a gap switch. Nick Bosa getting down the line of scrimmage for the running back, no scraping linebacker. There was, you know, when Patrick Mahomes ends up being your leading rusher as well, after Pacheco went for, he was about 60-some. I think Mahomes ended with about 80. Again, Patrick Mahomes' legs were, you know, big time. And again, some maybe comments we'll get from our guy we're going to talk about today, and Tom Brady, talking about legs and what quarterbacks are doing pre-snap and how the game has changed, obviously. But yeah, it was, you know, Patrick Mahomes. We talked about it last week, Neil. It's really, really hard to pick against Patrick Mahomes. You can pick against him. Nobody's going to bet against him. Because again, you know that money's just going to disappear. But what was really, really fantastic when he had to be. What were you guys' thoughts on overtime rules? Again, that's been a lot of the conversation. Again, whether it's the 49ers saying the players didn't know, the Chiefs saying, oh, we had every answer already. What were your thoughts on these new overtime rules and how they were implemented here for the Super Bowl?
I thought it was strange that the 49ers, you know, players said that they didn't know the rules were changed and things like that. That was strange. I mean, it's been changed for a couple of years now, so I don't know how they weren't aware of that. I know a lot of the question marks came from them, you know, receiving the ball instead of kicking, which I don't have a problem with them receiving the ball. I think either way, your defense is going to have to make a stop. Even if you give, you know, the Chiefs the ball, they're going to have to make a stop at some point for you to win the football game, obviously, unless they score, go for two and win it. I think when it comes down to it, I mean, I didn't like what Shanahan said in his post-game press conference. Said we were planning to get the ball third. I mean, that's kind of a strange strategy. I think he just said, I trust my defense to go out there and get a stop after we score a touchdown or a field goal. Then I would have felt more confident in his plan. But to say you're going to get the ball third, knowing you're going up against a team that's probably going to go for two if they score, yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
Yeah.
I thought maybe the Niners were trying to give their defense a break when they made that choice and didn't defer. That's the only thing that made sense to me. You know, given the comments since then, it's a little surprising, I guess, and they haven't really gotten their story straight, I guess. But that was my thinking there, and I'm like, kind of with James. I'm not sure that was a bad strategy, even if they had chosen to go first and that was their plan, but. Obviously, in retrospect, it looks bad because you gave Mahomes the ball last. You know, again, we can armchair quarterback this to death. It was definitely an interesting overtime and a very enjoyable one. And like you said, Roderick, we almost went to two overtimes.
Yeah, it was. It would have been, again, everybody, even people that know football, were sitting there at the end of overtime questioning, all right, well, what happens next? Again, the lack of urgency from the Chiefs getting up there for their, you know, ends up being the game-winning play was, well, the clock's about to run out. Yes. And again, to me, it's so odd that the only time we see these rules are the Super Bowl. Again, why have we not been able to come up with a simple overtime format that everyone knows, because it's the overtime format? Again, I think there's got to be a dozen ways that make sense. again, we don't need a different overtime format for regular season, for playoff games, for Super Bowl.
It should all be the same.
Again, it should all be the same. Again, creatures of habit, the way you game plan. Again, maybe they want that wrinkle. Again, who knows? It was interesting. But obviously, you know, when you just score a touchdown and you've already forced the field goal, it doesn't matter what the overtime rules are. You walk away with the Lombardi. So that kind of puts a bow on the Super Bowl. Again, both teams now amazingly look like they're going to bring back their entire coaching staffs. Obviously, you mentioned some free agencies. Both teams are going to have plenty of decisions to make, but that'll be a conversation for another day. James, let's get back into some unique perspective. There's this thing that people call the Patriot Way. You know, what did the Patriot Way mean to you? Obviously, the Patriot Way brought a bunch of Super Bowls over the last, you know, 20 years. You were a part of three of them. What did that Patriot Way mean to you? Let's start with that.
For me, it was hard work and accountability. You're going to get, you know, pushed to the limits in the meeting rooms, on the practice field, and then accountability is just – everybody's going to make mistakes at some point. And I know a big thing that, you know, Bill always preached, just, you know, accept the mistake that you made and move on from it. Don't, you know, say they brought a triple corner blitz off the left side where there was only one guy that blitzed. Just own up to your mistakes, move on and move past it and improve off of it. I think when you step into that organization, you see how accountable, you know, Bill Belichick is. You see how accountable Tom Brady is. He's been doing it for, by the time I got there, it's probably like 15 years or so. So when you see that, you see how hard that guy's working, and I'm a rookie 22, 23-year-old guy, I want to put in the work too. I'm younger than him. I'm supposed to have more energy. I'm supposed to be trying to, you know, last in this league as long as I possibly can. I want what he has. I mean, now I'm not a quarterback, but I want to go out there and have as much success that Tom Brady's having. So I think it's just all about hard work and accountability. And not everybody obviously can handle, you know, that type of coaching, that type of style, which I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit. But, you know, if you make mistakes, Bill Belichick, he's gonna put on the film in the team meeting room. You're gonna see it in front of everybody. It's gonna be from Tom Brady on down. And I learned that right away from OTAs when I got there. You know, we're watching OTA practices where we're just in shorts and all that. And I'm like, Tom and Jules, you know, didn't complete a pass in like 7-on-7, like he overthrew him or something. He's like, we come back in the meeting room after practice like we always do. He's like, you know, we got our two supposedly best players on our football team, can't complete a pass on air. Like, you know, I'm like, whoa, like he's going after Tom and like Jules. Of course he's gonna want me to do my job as a young rookie, but he's doing all that, you know, just to make you a better football player because he knows, you know, that you guys can execute better than what you have been doing. And it's just that accountability aspect, no matter whether it's an individual drill, whether it's 7-on-7, whether it's the Super Bowl, the accountability factor is always there. And I think, like I said, that like applied pressure, not everybody can handle that, you know, for OTAs, training camp throughout the season. And like I said, even the guys that we've been there, like you're going to get like frustrated, probably get agitated like at some point. But when you understand, you know, what the end goal is, and when you're playing in that Super Bowl and you're winning the game, then you're like, okay, this is what he's, you know, trying to get accomplished. So I think that's the biggest thing of the Patriot Way to me, is just being accountable, working hard, and just building that trust with your coaching staff and your teammates.
That's good. So it'll lead us into our conversation and our clip from Tom, but would you say that Patriot Way over the years that you were in New England, did it change? And if so, how did that Patriot Way change?
I think it changed. Obviously, you have to, you know, adjust to the guys that are coming, you know, into your organization within your football team. I think when you have a lot of the same guys, the continuity guy, Tom, Gronk, Jules, Devin McCourty, Rob Ninkovich, when you have guys that have been there for, you know, 8+ years, it's very easy to keep, you know, the mantra, keep the mindset and all that. When you have the proven veterans that have been there that can, you know, kind of spread what the coach is saying, not going to be like verbatim like what Bill does, but to sort of like, look, if you just go out here and do this, if you practice like this, if you prepare like this, we're going to be in the playoffs. We could potentially make it to the Super Bowl if you just trust the process. I think when you start to obviously lose some of the veteran players, start bringing some new guys in, it's a little bit harder. I mean, especially when guys are coming from, know, the outside in, maybe coming from a different place, different coaching style. It's not as easy for those guys to adjust very quickly. I think that's probably why, as the years have gone on, it started to shift some. But I thought Bill did an excellent job of trying to adjust to the, you know, the players that have came within his organization. Look, I can only imagine Bill Belichick, you know, 20 years ago before I was there versus when I got there my rookie year. I'm sure he wasn't, you know, as crazy or as strenuous or as tough as when, like, Tom Brady's rookie year. You got to adjust as the years go on. Like, each generation is different. They take coaching differently. They play the game differently at the college level versus the NFL level. So adjusting to what, you know, they can learn, what, how much they can grasp and all that stuff. There's a lot of things, a lot of factors that go into it. And like I said, some of the Patriots, you know, the success that they weren't having over the last couple of years, I don't think it's just completely on Bill Belichick, the coach. Maybe you can say, you know, the GM, as far as constructing the roster, finding the right pieces, I think that could be fair. But as far as coaching, I know for a fact they're preparing the same way, and he's coaching them just as hard as when I was there.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly. Again, there's, you know, any factor when you go into a team, any, you know, trying to figure out one thing leads to four or five different things. The players have changed, the game has changed, the rules have changed. All stuff we're going to get into either this week or in future weeks, because again, there's a lot of different ways that that you can start to slice this pie. So we'll just, you know, start eating it one slice at a time, because I love pie, so why not? So so your teammate, former teammate, Tom Brady, again, I would say almost universally acknowledged as the best quarterback of all time. If anybody's questioning that, then we need to get him checked. But we're not going to have the conversation about Mahomes today too soon. Patrick's on track. He's got a long way to go. But anyway, Tom has gotten out there more and more. He's done more videos, more podcasts. Seems like he was in every other commercial this year, you know, repping Dunkin' Donuts and hanging out with the guys, which is fantastic. But I would say he has not held back, been pretty blunt about some things in the NFL. I would say not uncommon for players of, you would say, past generations or past teams to be a little bit critical of the way the game is today. But again, he has not held some punches. So we're going to play the first clip here. It's from a sports talk show that he was on. It's a little over a minute, minute and a half or so. So let's listen to comments from Tom Brady on the NFL today, and then we'll jump into it and discuss.
There's a lot of mediocrity in today's NFL. I don't see the excellence that I saw in the past.
Why not?
And why not? I think the coaching isn't as good as it was. I don't think the development of young players is as good as it was. The rules have allowed a lot of bad habits to get into the actual performance of the game. So I just think the product, in my opinion, is less than what it's been. I think I look at a lot of players like Ray Lewis and Rodney Harrison and Ronnie Lott and guys that impacted the game in a certain way, and every hit they would have made would have been a penalty. Your coach is complaining about their own player being tackled and not necessarily, why don't they talk to their player about how to protect themselves? We used to work on the fundamental of those things all the time. Now they're trying to be regulated all the time. Offensive players need to protect themselves. It's not up to a defensive player to protect the offensive player. A defensive player needs to protect himself. I didn't throw the ball to certain areas because I was afraid players were going to get knocked out. Mm-hmm. That's the reality. Well, I didn't throw it to the middle when I played Ray Lewis because you knock him out of the game and I couldn't afford to lose a good player. I think there's a lot of mediocrity.
All right. Mediocrity in the game today. James, let's start. What was your initial reaction when you first heard that video, or now that you're hearing it today?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's correct. Obviously, the game, they're taking a little bit more awareness to, you know, the head injuries and all that. So that's really impacted the game as far as defenders have to play it. Yeah, and I think he speaks, you know, correctly when he says a defender shouldn't have to protect, you know, the offensive player. It's up to themselves to protect themselves. Like, how can somebody, you know, trying to tackle somebody, but okay, I can't hit him this way so he doesn't get hurt or this and that. I'm just trying to get the guy to the ground, and injury is going to happen. It's 100% injury rate, you know, in this football game. And you're going to get hurt at some point, whether it's, you know, your head, your foot, your ankles, you know, something bad probably going to happen at some point, and you can't avoid it. You're playing the game for a reason because you like physical contact. That's, you know, what I would assume if you're playing the game of football. And as far as like the mediocrity, what he says, like with the quarterback position, I do agree. Like, quarterbacks can throw the ball kind of any direction now. I mean, guys have to taper off, because they know they can't get a flag and somebody's running full speed at them. Like, yeah, I'm not going to hit him as hard and probably give the receiver a better opportunity to catch the football because he knows I'm not going to get my head knocked off going across the middle. I mean, like I said, I played in, like, I definitely was less fearful, you know, going across the middle because, like, look, a guy has to tackle me a certain way. Not that I was ever afraid before, but you probably worry a little bit less, you know, in this day and age. So I definitely agree with him. And like I said, I understand the other side of it too, you know, from the NFL trying to, the health and safety protocols, trying to make sure the head injuries, you know, aren't going to happen. But it's you're never going to 100%, you know, avoid it. I do think some guys do need to be smarter about the way they tackle, like instead of leading with your head to try and wrap up. And I think that all comes down to what Tom said as well, working on the fundamentals. I know with the Patriots, we did tackling drills all the time. I know you can't, like, you don't really tackle in practice anymore. So when it comes to the game, there's going to be a plenty of the tackle is probably the worst part of the NFL at this point because you can't really practice it. You only have a limited amount of, you know, padded practices, which, I mean, as a player, you definitely enjoy that. You don't have to be out there hitting every single day. But yes, they're tapering the game off a little bit just because of the physical aspect. But this is a physical football game. So the more you take that away from the players, you know, throughout the week, which I do understand it probably helps prevent some injuries, I think you'll continue to see some, you know, that mediocrity that he's talking about.
Yeah, there's a catch 22 element, yes, with about every one of these, right? Yeah. Again, you take it away in practice, which again is good. Obviously the players, you know, the less hitting you do during the week, your body feels a little better, you're a little bit better for the game. But again, it's going to result, if you can't practice something, you can't practice it. You're only going to get so good at it. There's only so many ways you can simulate, again, full live hitting, some of those things you see during the game. Neil, what were some of your overarching things before we jump into this in specifics?
James, we're in a time now where the starting quarterback in the Super Bowl is making less than a lot of college players. And you talked about the fact that, you know, Julian Edelman and Tom Brady missed a pass on Aaron and Belichick chewed him. You're talking about a six rounder, and I think Edelman was a UDFA. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Like a six rounder or something like that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Definitely a day three guy. Can you still coach a team that hard in this era? And do you think one reason that Bill Belichick is still unemployed is because he has that style and maybe it doesn't translate to today's player?
I think it's hard to coach that way because, like, a lot of guys are handed things these days. You're not getting, like, the accountability thing, I feel like, is not the same. I mean, like I said, I don't have a problem with NIL and transfer portal. I think it's great for these kids. They get to make money. They get to pick, you know, where they want to play, that type of thing. But if you coach somebody a little bit too hard, like, hey, I'm going to go somewhere else, you know, next year. I could transfer out of here, go play somewhere else next year. So it's, you got to try and find that balance, which is extremely hard. I don't know if that's the reason why Bill Belichick's not the coach for him. I think it's a little bit different because, you know, he's won. So it's like, okay, like, if I take his coaching, like, I know this guy can take us here because we've seen him do it. We've had the success. But when you have somebody else who may not have, you know, been a success, or he's an offensive coordinator and now he's a first-time head coach, he's trying to coach me this certain way, I'm like, why am I listening to this guy? We're 0-4. Like, what he's trying to do, it's not working. Why am I going to take that from you? It's extremely hard. The whole, you know, game of football has changed some. I think you can coach that way, but I think it just, that trust has to be built. Like, I don't think you can just walk in and go, okay, like, this is, I'm laying the law, like, right away. This is the way it is. If you can't, you know, take this heat, then you got to get out the kitchen. It's hard. A lot of young kids probably aren't going to gravitate towards that. They'll probably start gravitating away.
When I think about the Patriots, I think about the lasting successes, in addition to a Tom Brady, I think about a Troy Brown, I think about a Mike Vrabel, I think about a Teddy Bruschi, all these kind of players that were day three, mid-round type guys. Do you think that the team's success in those rounds, maybe, and not as much success in the first round typically, was due to Bill Belichick's coaching style? Maybe he got more out of those guys, or a little more blue collar, or was it because maybe they took some risks in scouting and didn't evaluate things as well in the earlier rounds? I mean, what do you attribute that to, James?
I think they just happened to find the right guys in those later rounds. Maybe it's them. It could have been the scouting department. I'm not sure, you know, how it works as far as, you know, whether it's the meetings at the combine, meetings, you know, pre-draft meetings and all that, getting to know the guys, seeing, you know, how they know the game. I know I had a pre-draft meeting, you know, with the Patriots and trying to see the way I, you know, learn the game of football, seeing the way, you know, I think of the game of football, whether it's them figuring out whether I work hard at practice at Wisconsin or vice versa with all those guys. I think you have to do – that's very important. I think it's not just – obviously just stats and all that, which is great. You have to get to know the person as a whole, just kind of like what I was talking about before, knowing if they can, you know, take that type of coaching that you're going to put on them and knowing – them knowing that you're just trying to get the best out of them. You're not trying to, you know, wear them out and, you know, degrade them and things of that nature, which Bill doesn't really do. He's – trying to motivate you to want to go out there and be better. You should want, you know, better for yourself if you're not going out there handling your business the right way. So I think they just really hit big on some of those day two, day three, day four pick or day three picks and undrafted free agents, which Bill has done an excellent job of throughout his career as far as getting, you know, undrafted guys, them playing their rookie season, second season, having a huge impact like Malcolm Butler, J.C. Jackson, guys like that. You know, for example, Julian, sixth round pick, Tom, later round pick and all that. I think he just is the ultimate motivator. If you just realize what he's trying to do, and I think you'll just like your first few months, you're probably like, damn, this dude's like, he's like on me. Like, I'm scared to like sit in his meetings, but as like the year goes on, as your first year goes by, you're like, okay, like I see what he's trying to do here. He's trying to motivate me because he sees the potential that I have. And if I realize my own potential and go out there and just practice hard and do the things that he's saying, I probably have the potential to be a great football player. And I saw, you know, throughout my 8 years, there are plenty examples, you know, of that happening, whether it's veteran guys coming from somewhere else or, you know, young undrafted rookies where, you know, probably no other team probably thought this kid would be a good football player. But here he is, you know, starting for the Patriots, you know, in his rookie season or in his second season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last question for you, James. You know, I think fans, and one of the reasons why the NFL is so popular is fans love to play the game of, oh my gosh, you passed on this guy, this guy, this guy, this guy, and Tom Brady was sitting there in the sixth round. I had a conversation with a scout probably 15 years ago, and I asked him this question, and he said, you know, the player, where he's drafted, that's who the player is.
Yeah.
That's who he, that's, I mean, we didn't miss on that guy. That's who he was coming out of college. Do you subscribe to that, James, or do you believe that, I mean, did Tom Brady build himself into the greatest of all time, or did teams just miss in their evaluations and he should have gone a lot higher? Where do you land on that?
I think he built himself. I think all of it, you know, kind of plays a factor. I feel like as far as the draft, I know some guys, like obviously extremely talented, like Caleb Williams guys, Drake May, like that, they see the potential. And I feel like that's where guys in the first round they get drafted. Not saying that they're not good football players or they're getting drafted in the first round for a reason. They see the potential of, you know, the ceiling that they could possibly reach. Maybe how the scouts see it is like this guy, this is just kind of what he is right there. These second, day two, day three guys, this is just kind of what they are. If they're in the right system, yes, they can be great players. But if I get this guy in the first round, this guy can be like way up here. Like I'm not sure how they look at it, but I feel like Tom Brady built himself. Him being drafted in the sixth round probably was a motivator for him. It was like he probably thought he should have been in the first round. So for like him getting picked there definitely helped him, you know, be the way he was. Him not coming in early, playing right away. He had to earn his way up. And then once he got it, he took off and ran with it. He found a plan, a routine. And I said he set himself up for the next, you know, 20 plus years, which will probably never be emulated. It's extremely hard. I think, yeah, it's hard to say why, you know, like guys, I mean, Broderick may know better than me, like as far as how they place guys where they should be drafted and whatnot. I'm not sure. Maybe the potential, like myself, I could see why, you know, I got drafted, you know, in the fourth round. I wasn't like a flashy athlete. I'm not going to jump a 40 inch vertical. I'm not going to run a 4.3. I'm not taking off on people running for 60 yard breaks every time I touched the football, but I was just like a dependable football player. I worked hard and I said, I maximized the talent that I had. And like I knew I wasn't going to be a first-round pick, but that didn't mean I wasn't going to be a good football player. You can be a good football player whether you're in the first round or undrafted. I think it's all about, you know, the scheme, in this, like the fit of the organization. I think all that plays a factor. I know we all get kind of caught up in like, oh, this guy should be the first overall pick, second overall pick. But those day two, day three undrafted guys, you're going to have more of those guys on your football team than first round picks. So all those guys, you know, matter just as much. And typically those are the guys that are on the roster, you know, longer than those first round picks a lot of the times, especially in recent history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot of different ways that, again, a guy is going to end up ending up in his draft spot. Again, from potential to, yeah, this guy's just a solid starter to, yeah, I just think this guy who he is. And then you get those guys, man, coaches love them and scouts love them. And again, lots of different reasons. Again, we're talking about a bunch of mid-round, maybe day three picks. Tom says the coaching is not as good and the development is not as good. I would say those go hand in hand. Yeah. Again, James, you already alluded to the fact that practice format has completely changed. I mean, it changed in the 5 or 6 years that I was with the Falcons. Again, much less go back to the early 2000s. Again, it's a catch 22. We all acknowledge that, you know, football players do not want to hit in practice, but it's not just the hitting that's gone away. It is the number of days you can get together. It is how long, it's what you can do. What is that because the coaching has not been as good too? Has the coaching gotten better so you can spend less time developing? I mean, again, talk to me about those two elements and again, how you saw it change and again, why, if the game is getting more mediocre, why are we okay with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as coaching, I feel like he may be talking about the preparation wise, as far as, you know, getting guys, you know, ready to play, whether it's practice or in the meeting rooms, like, okay, like we're running this versus cover two because of this, this guy's going to carry this, or they're going to, if we line up in this formation and we motion here, we're trying to get to this look, just getting these guys prepared and ready to go on a week-to-week basis, not just like, okay, we're just calling this play because it looked cool or this team ran it versus them and we're just going to run it because they had success on it. Just explaining, you know, why we're doing things and making sure, especially at the quarterback position. I feel like that's obviously what he's alluding to. We've seen the game change so much. It's always been there. Like you saw, like ever since, you know, Oregon and Texas Tech and these, you know, type offenses where you hold a card up and it's really the offensive coordinator or somebody in the booth who's getting the quarterback to the right play. It's not really the quarterback actually going out there, seeing the picture and figuring out himself like, okay, this is a bad look. Let me make sure I get to something else because this play isn't going to work to that. It's let me look to the sideline and the coach is going to, like, he can see it from up top. It's like, all right, we're getting to this play now. And you don't really know why you're doing it. You're just doing it because, you know, coach showed you a card and you're just going to the next play. So I feel like, especially in our system with Josh McDaniels, like he's going to explain why we're doing everything and everybody's going to hear from offensive line, quarterback, receivers, running backs, tight ends, everybody's going to hear why we're doing it. And Tom is going to know when we line up, get up to the line of scrimmage, based on a certain look he may get, I know this play isn't going to work. Let me get to something else, or I'm going to make my alert based on the look that I'm seeing. I don't need the coach on the side. I mean, Josh is going to be yelling from the sideline, too, if he sees something to try and get Tom right. Every coach does that at some point. But I think the preparation as far as, you know, making sure guys know what they're doing on a game-to-game basis, I think that's what he's alluding to. I think the practice does have a factor to it as well as far as developing, you know, these players. You're probably going to get, depending on the player, you probably get like 10 reps out there, like live reps, like team peer reps, and then you're on to the next day. You're only working on certain things each day. You know, on Wednesday, it's first and second down. Thursday, you probably have a couple first and second down plays, and then you're focused on third down. And Friday, you're in the red zone, two-minute situations and all that. So you only have a limited, you know, amount of reps throughout the week, especially once you get in season and you're not hitting. You just got to, you know, form fit and like all that stuff, which – I said, if you know how to practice, it's effective. But some of these guys, they don't know how to practice. Just like I know I'm not hitting, so I'm not gonna go full speed. I'm not gonna really get the right look. I'm not gonna make sure I'm prepared, you know, for Sunday or Thursday or Monday, whatever it is. I feel like that does play a factor because like how do these coaches maximize these whatever 5 reps for this player, or these 12 reps for this player, or these 20 reps for this player? How am I gonna get this guy prepared and ready to go for Sunday to go out there and play.
Yeah. And coach, again, it's the old coaching is there. There's one element of coaching that is the X's and O's, and it looks really good up on boards. And I think we've seen more and more of those X's and O's coaches not have sustained long-term success, but coaching is teaching, right? Coaching yep. is figuring out how this player learns. Everybody yep. learns different. Again, that's a big part of the scouting process that every scout, all right, how does James White learn? Is he a board guy? Is he a walkthrough guy? Again, yep. how does Wisconsin do it? Again, there's schools that teams will stay away from because, hey, this is, again, it's the old Baylor model. Baylor, again, they're going to look at cards. They're going to line up. And, yep. you know, it's like, well, again, this guy can go play for this offense, but yeah, this is not going to be a fit for us because he's going to have three different checks he's got to know. He's going to be
read coverages. Yeah.
all those factors are going to play in. So if coaching is not as good, teaching must not be as good. Why are coaches, they're making more and more money every year. They're getting better and better opportunities. What is it about coaching that we've maybe lowered the standard for forcing them to be really good teachers and developers of players?
I'm not sure why the standard, you know, has been lower. I think we just kind of get caught up in whether, you know, this offense is the highest scoring offense in the league. This guy's going to be a great head coach. It's like, I mean, maybe not. I mean, he's probably a great offensive coordinator. He may not be a great leader of men and like all that thing. So I'm not sure, you know, why the standard has been lowered, but I feel like obviously coaches are getting younger and younger. You're hiring guys under 40. You don't really see coaches over, you know, 50 years old. This was what you used to see, coaches over 50 years old all the way across the board. Maybe these guys need to sit a little bit longer and learn and, you know, learn how to, you know, teach and learn how to, you know, lead men. And then maybe that can change things. I don't know, but it just depends on the person. It's unique. I think as far as a coach, you have to encompass everything, not just X's and O's. You got to be a leader of men. You got to know how to motivate guys, and you got to make sure your guys are, you know, prepared on a week-to-week basis. There's a lot of things and a lot of factors that go into it. And instead of just, you know, calling plays, like obviously all the guys are going to call plays at some point, but you got to be able to encompass, you know, everything to make sure your team is motivated and ready to go come game day.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think back again, we talked about our Super Bowl year with the Falcons where we drafted Keanu Neal, Deion Jones, Devondre Campbell, and then had Brian Poole as an undrafted free agent all starting most of the year, definitely in the Super Bowl. And I think back on the amount of extra time not only our coaches spent, but those guys, they came in and they saw the depth chart. They knew if we were going to be successful, I've got to play at this level. And all of those guys committed to it. And the amount of time that they were extra in the building with, again, QC coaches, coordinators, their position coaches. It was, I mean, I didn't see it again after that year. Again, the urgency for, hey, we've got to, going into the draft that year was like, oh, we probably need five starters. Well, we also had it in Austin Hooper as well. And then Wes Schweitzer ended up playing some snap as well. And again, it's like, well, the urgency was there for those players. The urgency was there for the coaches. Again, you get some programs, some franchises where you draft those players and maybe they're not going to be expected to contribute year one. Again, depending on who they are, where they get drafted. But again, the development still has to be happening, maybe at a different rate, maybe in a slightly different way. But the development has to keep happening. Again, you hit the age factor. Again, the younger QC coaches, that's how you're going to learn to really be a teacher, to know the playbook, to get into it, to learn to interact with those guys. Again, everybody in those unique situations. And hopefully that also leads to the coaching being something good as well. Again, that was my green light when I figured out that scouting over coaching was going to be for me. I hated the X's and O's. Yeah. I wanted to do the individual stuff. I wanted to diagnose one-on-one with a player. You know, it was myself and myself scouted when I was, my short, stiff, white corner playing days at Division III football. Again, that's where I figured it out. But again, it carried every level that I've ever been at, and I coached at Case Western, and that's the element I loved, was taking guys and developing them one-on-one. So again, the coaching, the development, those are big pieces. Again, James, you already hit on it with the, again, tackling being a big factor. Again, you think about how, as Tom said, it regulating things out of the game. Again, I think back to the Rams playoff game this year when Tyler Higbee took a low legal hit that his teammates were really upset about. But again, the defensive player knew if I go up top on him, there's a chance I'm sitting on the sideline for the rest of this game. Now he goes low. All of a sudden we have an injury. Players are fired up. Again, it's a catch 22 without question. How do you balance protecting players with certain rules and, again, maybe, you know, upping practice time again a little bit to help figure this stuff out?
It's hard. Maybe you just have to allow more time or allow more physical contact, you know, throughout the week, as far as letting these guys work on tackling so they know, you know, where to target when somebody's going across the middle, where to target a ball carrier, you know, when he's holding the football. But they have enough time to do that. It's just, will the coaches actually emphasize that, you know, training camp and all throughout the season? I think that's the biggest thing. I know, you know, with Bill, we do tackle, like I said earlier, we do tackling drills all year long, all the way through the Super Bowl. Not fully to the ground, but at least working on angles or, you know, wrapping up to make sure you're always staying, you know, up to speed with. I don't know how many teams actually do that. I know when you see teams like in college, like Alabama, I know they do a similar type thing where they work on tackling all year long. You just have to work at it. No matter how much time you have, whether you got to teach it in the meeting room, teach it on the practice field, guys staying after practice themselves to do it, you know, hitting the dummies. I think that's just what it is, because they're not going to go back to just letting guys, you know, tee off on one another. I think it's already, this is what it's going to be. So I think it's just all about these guys working on, you know, where you're going to target. And like, if I was like Tyler Higbee and his teammates, yeah, I'd probably be pissed too. But that's just what defenders have to do. I'm trying not to get a penalty. And the only way I'm not going to get it is I hit him in the legs. And that's just kind of what it is. I mean, he can aim a little bit better, but you're going to err on the side of caution. I don't want to get suspended. I don't want to get fined. And I'm not trying to get a flag to hurt my team. So the best place for me to hit you is in your legs.
Yep. Yeah.
James, Joshua Daniels had a lot of success in New England. You got to work with him pretty closely, obviously. You could argue that the reason that Bill Belichick is no longer head coach in New England is because of his offensive failings over the last 2 or 3 years. Yet, McDaniel's success in New England hasn't translated in Denver, hasn't translated in Las Vegas. What do you attribute that to? Is there a certain aspect of his offenses or the way he coaches or the way he teaches that have not been able to connect with those teams? And, you know, what reason would you give for his so far lack of success as a head coach?
I know for me, I know he's a great teacher. He helped teach me the game, helped me, you know, become the player that I was as far as learning the game of football, learning how to be, you know, running back, pass protect, run the football, run routes and all that stuff. I feel like it's all about having the right guys, you know, in your organization, you know, when you're there. As far as players, you have to have, you know, guys that are going to echo what you're trying to voice to the team. You got to have veteran players within the locker room that are going to be on the same page as you. As soon as you, if you don't have that, it's going to be hard when you have a young football team. And like I said, and especially when you're not winning, if you're not winning football games, it's harder for you to keep that team together. And I think for like, that's where it's really gone wrong for him. I know from an X's and O's standpoint, there's no one better. He knows the game. I know everybody likes to say his offense is played out and, you know, all these different flashy offenses and all that. But we had plenty of success doing what we did. And, you know, the Raiders had some success at some points. So I just feel like you have to have the right players and the right fit. And when you don't have that, especially for the younger guys, it's extremely hard.
Yeah, I agree. Again, Coach McDaniels, again, a guy that has had a couple opportunities. We'll see if he ever gets another one as a head coach again, but certainly has plenty of success with you and that offense in New England. So, you know, the question that is going to keep coming up, and I think is going to be a question that we'll hit on some more of Tom Brady's comments in a future episode, but it's the age-old chicken and egg question. Has the game changed because the players have changed, or have players continued to change because the game has changed? Again, at the NCAA level, again, maybe down at the high school level, certainly at the NFL level. Again, it's a question that we'll circle back to at some point. But let's do some hiring cycle cleanup. Again, a team we just mentioned with the Raiders. It seemed like they had their OC ready, lined up, and then now I think they do. But again, I think we got Cliff Kingsbury headed out to Washington with DQ. I believe, is it Getsy that's in Vegas now?
Yep.
Is everything kind of, you know, hiring cycle wise gets cleaned up? Anything anything jump out to you guys, James? Anything jump out?
Jumps out as far as the hiring. I thought the Seattle hire was great. I thought the Mike McDonald, thought he's did an excellent job when he was at Michigan, and then did an excellent job once he got to the league with the Ravens, to see what he did with that, you know, that team. It's a veteran, you know, defensive line. My guy Kyle Van Noy and Jadeveon Clowney had their best years as far as pass rushers. Both had like 9 sacks apiece. And I said that was a strength of their team, best defense in the league. I feel like, you know, that was the mantra of the Seahawks when they were really good. So for them to get back to that and attacking defense, and they have the weapons on offense, I think he'll get them back on track where they need to be, because they have a good roster. So if you have a defensive coach that can get them back shored up on that side of things, and he brings in a good offensive coordinator, I really like that hire there.
Good. Yeah, certainly a stable front office and everything for him to work with as well. Neil, what are your thoughts?
I think what's really developing and has been an unsung story so far is what's happening in Washington. Yeah. You know, Cliff Kingsbury initially took a job. I can't remember if it was the Raiders or who it was as OC. It was reported, all those kind of things. And then he withdrew and winds up in Washington. My understanding, and I think it's been reported so far, is that they gave him assurances that they're going to do everything they can to trade up and get Caleb Williams. And That's an interesting situation right there, because, you know, what's it going to take? Are the Bears going to elect to go and, you know, stay with what they have and continue to try to develop their quarterback? You know, I think that's a situation that really bears watching. And, you know, it's interesting to me because for the last, I think since 2020, we've reached out to scouts and executives across the league and asked, you know, who are the GMs who are the guys going to be bright stars? And Adam Peters consistently came up in those conversations. Is Adam Peters going to be willing to spend all of his capital right now to get a Caleb Williams to bring in? And will he be the answer there? Or is he going to kind of be a little more conservative and maybe settle for, you know, a Drake May or what have you, in a Cliff Kingsbury offense, which is not for everybody. I don't know. Would a Drake May even make sense in a Cliff Kingsbury kind of offense, you know? And so I think, I mean, it requires a certain kind of quarterback, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So it's going to be really interesting to see what Washington does and what they're willing to pony up, and if the Bears are willing to play ball and listen. And that's, I think, a plot line that's going to play out over the next 2 to 3, 3 to 4 weeks. And it'll be really interesting. You know, here we are less than 2 weeks away from the combine. It'll be interesting to see kind of what happens there. And if anyone pulls the trigger before we get to Indianapolis, and, you know, if Washington's holding that number one and is positioned to take Caleb Williams, that's kind of what I'm watching right now. And I think that's going to be an interesting plot line as we go.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like every time a staff seems like it's getting settled, something else comes up. Again, you think about Ohio State, you know, jumping out of the college ranks, they get Bill O'Brien up there. And then a couple of weeks later, Jeff Hafley leaves, and now Bill O'Brien's gone. Maybe Ohio State still gets the quarterback of the future out of it, and Jacob Saylors, who followed him up there. But how about the fact that a head coach at UCLA in Chip Kelly leaves to be the offensive coordinator for the Buckeyes? Again, we've talked about it, you know, on the college side a few times. The big schools are big and powerful and throwing their power and weight around. And I mean, what were your thoughts when you see Chip Kelly leaving to be the OC for the Buckeyes?
I was surprised. I thought if he was leaving, he was going to the NFL as a offensive coordinator. So I was shocked. I mean, I mean, he's had some decent success at UCLA, but I'm sure they probably paid him a pretty good penny to could have come over there to Ohio State to get that offense back going, because we know it's been a well-oiled machine over the last several seasons. Last year was okay with Kyle McCord, at quarterback, his first year starting. So, I mean, I think Chip Kelly, he'll bring his old innovative spread offense and all that stuff in there to see if it works. Because obviously Ryan Day, he's definitely feeling the pressure there. That for them is national championship or bust, and they've lost to Michigan the last few years. So, I mean, I'm sure he's trying to do whatever it takes to get them back to where they need to be.
You know, we don't get to hear as much of the talk from assistant coaches and even head coaches about the turmoil they're facing and the stressors and all those kind of things. And when Maurice Lewis left Buffalo to go to Alabama to be the OC, okay, he left a MAC job. Kane Womack leaves to go to Alabama, okay, he left USA. All right, whatever. But then Jeff Hafley leaves an ACC team to take a coordinator position. And Chip Kelly leaves what was once a Pac-12 coach team to take an OC position. These are major stories to me. And I know that they've made a splash, but it's probably – there's, I guess, my interest in what's going on beneath the surface with so many of these coaches that they're willing to jump, and especially so late in the process. And, you know, Chip Kelly's leaving, as you alluded to, James, and going to a team where I'm not sure Ryan Day – is there much longer if they don't produce immediately? So what's going on in coaching circles and what and those kind of discussions and how they're dealing with the new realities of football is really a really interesting plot line to me, and something that I hope we hear more of, and hopefully something we'll talk about more as we go forward, because it is just seismic changes in the game right now, and they're becoming hard to adjust to.
Yeah, I mean, it's no question. The former Pac-12, again, UCLA is there's name recognition. That is LA. That is a tradition rich program. But for him to jump ship, obviously, him and Ryan Day go back again. I believe Ryan Day played for Chip Kelly. So again, there's a history there. But again, that is one of those ones where it's funny watching Michigan celebrate and make fun of Ohio State when Bill O'Brien turns and jumps ship, but then it's like, oh wait, I think I would have actually preferred Bill O'Brien to Chip Kelly. So again, you get a lot of I see my cartoon, all my cartoon cutups and some of the heads going back and forth. So it's a lot of fun. Again, like I said, the landscape, again, it's not all the way settled yet. With the transfer portal, with everything, NIL, it's all changing. Football's changing. Again, we'll continue to talk about that, but it's not going anywhere either. So that's the good thing. Good for us. Again, keeps us involved, everything like that. Next up is the combine, right? Neil, talk to me about your event coming up at the combine. What should people look for? Can they come? What do you have lined up?
Yes, speaking of stressors, yeah, Wednesday and Thursday. We're 2 weeks away. We're 14 and 15 days away from the biggest events of the year for Inside the League. Wednesday the 28th will be our traditional seminar. We'll have 150 to 200 scouts, maybe more this year. They're kind of celebrating the industry. It's kind of the Academy Awards of scouting. Can't wait to hand the big glass trophy to the team that was elected to have the best draft. Our finalists this year, we had some real contenders. Detroit made some great choices. Yeah. Obviously, Houston had the D-Roy and the O-Roy, and then the Rams, which continually tell people they don't even send scouts to All-Star games or the Combine, had an outstanding draft as well. So we've got a little bit of suspense on who's going to win that. That'll be a lot of fun. We've got 16 winners in each conference in the BART list, recognized by their peers as which scouts are the best in the industry. We also have three that have voted on will accept awards in the categories of best on pro day, best peer evaluator, and best at gathering character information in each conference. And then, of course, we have the CEO Brocato Award, which is highly, it's been really touching to see the scouts that have been honored and how much it means to them to accept that award. And we're flattered that we're able to do that. And then of course the Eugene Parker Award, which is going to another lifetime achievement award for the industry and others. We've got a whole lot going on, and I hope people can join us 6:30 PM room 125 of the Indiana Convention Center. And then Thursday morning, speaking of NIL and the stressors on the game and what have you, we're going to have Oscar Magne, who has run the portal, been the portal guy at Northwestern, Oregon, Stanford, Duke, and finally Texas A&M. He's going to come in and tell us where the bodies are buried. He's going to talk about the
I'm losing you a little bit here.
He's going to tell stories. It's going to be okay. I don't know if you caught any of that or not, we're going to have an expert there on the portal. Okay. We're going to have an expert on the portal who's going to talk for an hour and tell stories and really, I think, open a lot of eyes. I think that, and that event's going to be more, aimed more at contract advisors. I think that NFLPA licensed agents are missing an opportunity right now. And I think when they hear what Oscar's got to say, they're going to be a lot more interested in getting in and getting their hands dirty in the on the portal side of things and helping players find the best deals, find the best schools, and all those kind of things. So that's our Wednesday, and that's our Thursday. I'm going to feel a whole lot better about life at noon Eastern on Thursday in 2 weeks. But right now, this is our game day. We're getting ready for it. So real excited about it. Excited to see everyone there. Indianapolis is always a lot of fun because people will go from email addresses and cell phone numbers to actual living, speaking beings. And it's always great to see people renew acquaintances, reinforce relationships, and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
So Indianapolis is going to be a lot of fun if we get there. Hopefully it will be as seamless as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. What's like you said, it's we had Blake on last week and he said, let's just get the Super Bowl done so we can get into draft season. Combine is the big first step in that. So lots of draft nicks, draft gurus, people that think they know a little bit everything in between, people that just love football. That's the best part of it. The NFL has truly created a year-round product. Again, it's good for people like us that are in the business, and it's a lot of fun to have. And as always, again, if you have any questions, I want to shoot anything over. Neil is on X at Inside the League. You can find me on there at RightStepADV. James, are you out there? If the people want to get in touch with you,
yeah, on X at SweetFeet_White.
SweetFeet_White. That is fitting if I've ever heard one. So that's good. James, it's been fantastic to have you on here. Hopefully we can get you back for more. You have any, we're going to put it out there for the end of the people. Any big plans for the rest of the day?
No big plans for the rest of the day. Just relaxing while the kids are in school, you know?
There we go. Relax while the kids are in school. Definitely have to do that. Well, Neil, we'll let you go so you can get everything wrapped up and get everything ready for 2 weeks from now. Looks like you are on the move. But again, great to have you on, James, Neil, as always. As we get ready for the scouting combine in a couple weeks, we will be back next week with one more pre-combine episode. But as you go back, watch the Super Bowl, watch games, get ready for these spring leagues, and everything you do, keep scouting.